One of the first decrees issued by Trump after returning to office this year was to condemn the United Nations. Quote, "The United States helped found the United Nations after World War II to prevent future global conflicts and promote international peace and security. But some of the UN's agencies and bodies have drifted from this mission and instead act contrary to the interests of the United States while attacking our allies and propagating anti-Semitism," unquote. Well, Mike, there was a scheduled UN conference on the two-state solution that was originally planned for June 17th to the 20th, this month in New York, but has been postponed. The U.S. continues to use its veto in the UN Security Council, and yet the 193-member body resumed its 10th emergency special session this month on illegal Israeli actions in occupied East Jerusalem and the rest of the occupied Palestinian territory. So there's ongoing drama at the UN with Israel and the US blocking seemingly every advance toward recognizing the Palestine as a state. What's your assessment now of what's happening with the UN in terms of its the courts representing international law and US and Israel with its recent military attacks on Iran? What's your assessment?
I think we're seeing a devolution of the law that's not like anything that's happened since the 19th century in the efforts to unionize in this country. Domestically, we know that the Supreme Court is issuing decisions now without any opinion that allow completely illegal activity under present law to be allowed so long as it's being done by the executive branch of government. We've got people saying they're not going to comply with legal orders. Internationally, the UN, we're doing everything possible to undermine, refute, and reject decisions made by agencies that we were instrumental in creating.
As Trump himself acknowledges, but have been overtaken by rampant anti-Semitism, which is apparently the opposing anti-Semitism is the one virtuous moral cause that the Trump administration stands for.
Well, 95% of the world believes that they're opposing Israel, not Jews, and that Israel has behaved in an unconscionable manner. It's been bombing everybody in the Near East. It's been shooting and killing people in Gaza who are lining up to get food that they've been deprived of. Its activities have been were systematically reviewed by the International Court of Justice in response to an action initiated by South Africa and signed on by dozens of other countries.
That started in December of 2023, but some very important rulings over the last year and a half.
Well, in January of 24, the ICJ found evidence that Palestinians in Gaza were at risk of genocide. They ordered Israel to implement provisional measures to prevent further harm. Then in May of 24, as Israel pressed an offensive in Rafah, the ICJ issued another ruling ordering Israel to halt and to allow unimpeded humanitarian access to the Gaza Strip. And then last July, they issued a landmark advisory opinion declaring Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory to be illegal. That echoed resolutions that they've been making since 1967.
And part of the significance of that July 2024 ruling was calling on other countries to not collaborate in supporting the occupation of the Palestinian territories, which basically implicitly supports a kind of BDS, the BDS campaign.
And finally, the other version of the law in the UN, the International Criminal Court, has issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and his former defense minister, Yoav Gallant, along with the leaders of Hamas. But these international laws have all failed. They failed explicitly, but Israel has defied them. The United States has responded by assaulting the judges who made these decisions and says that if they ever show up in the U.S., their property will be confiscated. So it's a tough time for general principles of the law. And my own view is that that's exactly when they're the most important. The whole concept of the law, which is an idea that has no troops to support it, is that decisions will be made in certain ways. Certain people must be heard from. Certain ideas and documents and evidence have to be considered. The whole concept, the structures of due process, are being utterly violated right now. And Trump is so transactional. I mean, he could win a Nobel Prize by simply ordering his UN rep to not veto principles of the UN that would establish a two-state solution in Israel and Palestine, because the UN Security Council has the power to do that.
Returning to the decree of Trump, one of the many issued early on when he ascended to the throne again, was that he described a drift over time in the United Nations bodies and its decisions away from its original mission, which centered on territorial disputes, toward what he calls anti-US and anti-Semitic decisions. I think what he described as anti-Semitic decisions, much of the world would describe as the U United Nations moving to take up the struggles of oppressed people that turn who turn to the courts as kind of the last place of a hearing. What's your assessment of that shift over time in the United Nations and its primarily its courts, but also the larger body of the assembly?
Well, the drift has been in the United States away from following the law in its desire to keep a firm grip on Middle Eastern oil and to have Israel, its proxy, act to defend it and to increase it and to get rid of anyone who may conceivably someday threaten that. So the UN has been relatively solid. It's the US that has drifted. And drifted, they've swum frantically away. I mean, Trump, to not only he said he could easily start a major world war as well as win a Nobel Prize. The idea of the law is to constrain and keep people acting within certain limits. And he has done everything possible to avoid that. And he is carrying the whole United States in a big drift away from even funding fundamental agencies of the UN.
I mean, the right wing hostility toward the United Nations and to conspiracies of a global government. I mean, that's been around as far as I can remember. I mean, even in my childhood, I remember a lot of anti-UN thinking that animated right wing rhetoric. There's both something old and something new here, including the U.S. Not abiding by decisions of the courts that conflicted with its own foreign policy decisions. Israel has ignored 50 some resolutions or decisions of the courts over the years. But you say there's something different happening now.
Well, I think what's happening now is that Israel's quantitative increase in bombings and killings and murders is going to exhaust them. And they have so thoroughly isolated themselves in the world. I mean, 95% of the world now is explicitly disapproves their course of action in Gaza. So there are running out of missiles to shoot down Iranian missiles. They're running out of planes. Seven Israeli soldiers were killed Tuesday night in Gaza, in the Khan Yunis. They are, I think, going to run themselves out of time and out of space and out of money economically. They're going to have a hard time entering song contests entering athletic events. The isolation of Israel is not quite complete, but the United States is the only friend they have that is no longer that's sufficient in, only in terms of military support. And I think it's critical that the law continue to assert what must be done, and that Israel will sooner or later, reluctantly and in some kind of backhanded manner, have something to comply with if it wants to rejoin the world community.
One shift that's notable in the discussions around Israel and the resolution of the so-called Palestine question is the shift from continuing momentum for a two-state solution, including within the United Nations, as well as discussion of a one-state solution and more scholars and justice for Palestine advocates, but even legal scholars talking about the two-state solution has been basically destroyed as more and more territory gets devoured by Israel. What remaining is a patchwork of what some call Bantustans in the occupied West Bank, little pockets of Palestinian territory. So some argue that the only viable path forward is a one-state solution. And we saw some of the argument for that even in the mayor race with Mamdani calling for virtually a one-state solution by saying he supported Israel as a democratic state with rights, equal rights for all.
I think that's the only solution. And of course, it seems impossible right now, but everything is impossible until it happens. And there is no other way, because you're, all the criticisms of two-state solutions are correct. Israel has on the ground, systematically, family by business, by political organization, in, expanded its presence in the West Bank, even as the number of Palestinians has remained relatively constant, but the only fair solution would be for the Jews of Israel to find themselves a home in Israel and not a, an apartheid state where they deprive the other people who live there of any right to political or personal freedoms.
And of course, that call for equal rights and a democratic state and creating a new constitution in Israel, just as South Africa had to create a new constitution, evokes this moral horror, including on the part of Democrats who say that's calling for the destruction of Israel. And that's becomes the litmus test for many. Terms of support for Israel is anything that seems to threaten its current the current formation of the state. How do you think the rhetorical or discursive terrain has shifted around that taboo and the charge that people who support Palestine are calling for the destruction of Israel?
It seems impossible, and the horror comes from the destruction of Israel. What would be destroyed would be an apartheid system. There would be nothing destructive, no lives lost, and many lives gained if Israel simply became a democratic state that included both Jews and Palestinians. I think not only is it possible, but there is no other solution. Just as in South Africa, there was no other solution. Now, the South Africa has shown that despite constant problems and issues of relationships between blacks and whites and institutions, the difficulties are those that are far better than the difficulties they were dealing with when there was an apartheid state and one class of people had absolutely no rights at all.
And the freedom to move about is nothing to minimize. I've spent a fair amount of time, last 20 years in South Africa, and of course the problems and the heartache continue and white domination. of much of the economy, but you see a lot of mobility, people, black and white South Africans, Indian South Africans, they are on the beaches, they move about, and the elimination of the passbook system, the restriction on the movement of black people has changed in spite of the ongoing problems faced by South Africans.
I think both the Israelis and the Palestinians would surprise us all in how they adapted. And the Palestinians now, when you talk about movement, it's phenomenally restricted in the West Bank. They have an entire separate system of roads that are only accessible to Israelis. And the change of a one-state solution, I think, would be profound and could reverberate in all sorts of unexpectedly positive ways. It's like I said, everyone thinks that it would be the end of the universe, but not everyone, but all people in positions of power. But I am very heartened by the New York mayoral campaign, where the position is essentially laid out by the man who won an overwhelming victory, who basically accepts that Israel is safest and most secure when all it wanted is a democratic state, to the extent that it allows its citizens the right to vote, all citizens.
Yeah, in a city that's the biggest concentration of Jewish people outside of Tel Aviv, apparently.
It's a remarkable development, and I think the Democrats in general should learn from somebody who's firm about his values. And he's positive without being sort of a vacuous, joy-based campaign. He's as generally upbeat with his spirit emerging from really solid and helpful ideas.
Yeah, and brought a certain cachet to democratic socialist policies, which of course are not so radical in many places of the world, you know, free childcare, free city buses, and things that are quite popular but considered the dangerous far left in this country. So there's some I encouraging news, even as dark clouds continue to loom on the horizon. Thanks, Mike. We'll continue to follow the lawlessness of our land, and but you also are both a critic of the laws as they developed as instruments of power in the empire, in this state, but also do you want to close on a final few words about the law?
Well, I've never been so fond of the law as I have become in the face of somebody as president who's so utterly transactional, who could end the world or win a Nobel Prize according to how he wakes up in the morning. The idea of structures within which we all have to work is, as they are under siege now, or as they are being contemptuously waved off, I see their value in ways that I had really not appreciated before. The law is, of course, a way of consolidating power, but it's also in the idea of due process and procedure is something that is a fundamental basis of societal order. And we really come to see how important that is when it gets blown away.
So we will continue to fight for the left in the law, as well as at the law. Thanks, Mike. We'll talk again next month.
You're welcome.